You're listening to Leaders Portfolio. I'm your host, Rebecca Blacksmith. We're talking with leaders from across the D.C. area about leadership. I learn from them every week, and I hope you do too. How do you be a better leader? Particularly, how do you be a better leader in this economic climate, which makes it very tricky? Also, we have the 2010 Leaders Portfolio Awards coming up. You can nominate an individual or a business, or you can apply yourself. Categories include Business Leader of the Year and Leadership Business of the Year. We even have a newcomers category, Rising Business Leader of the Year, for an applicant who has never been, does not currently hold a position as a CEO or owner of a business. Of course, you can find these nomination or application forms at leadersportfolio.com, and we hope that you will nominate someone. I know you know a good leader out there, so send it in. Our first guest in studio with us at Leaders Portfolio is the president and CEO of Abdo Development, Jim Abdo. Jim, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Now, Abdo Development is located in Washington, D.C. It's a development and construction company that specializes in luxury residential and retail development. And give us a little background more into what your firm does.
Well, I started the firm really focusing on urban infill redevelopment, urban core development, smart growth development. And a lot of what we were doing very early on, and we continue to do today, is a lot of adaptive reuse, historic preservation projects. And the company has continued to grow year in and year out to the point now where we're doing very large urban assemblages, entire city blocks, and redeveloping certain important corridors of the city. And so we're just very much committed to smart growth principles and seeing the urban core and seeing the city come back strong and healthy.
Now, historic buildings, you know, so you've been doing this a few decades. The adaptive use of historic buildings in D.C., is it more or less favored upon now than when you first started?
Well, I think people are always inspired by historic structures, and how you adapt them and reuse them can inspire people to want to live in them. We've taken on some very, very challenging buildings, former crack houses, burned out shells, old schools that were no longer in use, an old monastery. A lot of very challenging buildings that were never ultimately designed to be what we created them and turned them into, which is high-end luxury residences for individuals. And people are inspired by the history of these buildings, they're inspired by the level of build-out and the quality of the buildings themselves. And we found a really interesting niche market of people that would follow us from project to project that want to be a part of what we were creating.
Interesting. Now, do you get pleasure out of getting, you know, an older project that you think, like a crack house, mm-hmm. there's no way I can make this work. Mm-hmm. And that's actually your favorite mm-hmm. project because it's really hard?
Well, we love challenges. I mean, it can be, you know, it can be really exhausting to take on projects like that. But one of the things that was important to me fundamentally was to create housing but not do it through a process of displacement. The buildings that we've taken on were vacant and abandoned. They were urban infill sites where people were not living. And it was very important to me that as we created market rate housing and created luxury residences for individuals, we were not doing that at the expense of others, and particularly those individuals of low income. And we've managed to hold true to that, you know, for the last 15 years. We've become a sizable development company in the district, and to date we have not displaced anyone, while at the same time creating an enormous amount of housing and housing opportunities within the city.
And Landmark Lofts, mm-hmm. you had a famous tenant who bought $1 million unit from you, D.C. Mayor Williams, and Williams actually also officiated your marriage to your wife.
That's true. He's a very close friend. He's my son's godfather. He ironically had never owned a residence his entire life. He saw what we were doing on the H Street corridor. This is a gateway project, a building that was originally built by the Catholic Church in the 1870s. Was in severe disrepair. We bought it from the Capitol Children's Museum, which has now since become the National Children's Museum, and they were relocating. And we transformed this beautiful 140-year-old distressed building into something really dramatic and unique and loft condominiums right at the gateway of H Street. And he fell in love with what we were doing over there, saw the potential for H Street, knew that that was a corridor that was going to be coming back around and was going to be experiencing a renaissance, and it is today, and wanted to be an owner there. And we've got a lot of really wonderful, very smart individuals that have purchased there, including Sheila Johnson, the co-founder of BET, a Pulitzer Prize-winning author, from a writer from the Washington Post is a resident there, a rookie number one draft pick of the Washington Wizards lives there, JaVale McGee, among a lot of other very talented individuals. So we're very proud of the success of that project.
And talk about how you've had to, you know, everyone's facing this now. There's no lending or minimal lending. So how have you had to kind of readjust your business, shift your business to handle the current economic climate?
Well, fortunately, I built this model knowing that that real estate is a very cyclical business. So when I built the company, I was careful not to solely rely on the, you know, the speculative housing component. We have a component of income properties and cash flow properties with a portfolio of apartments. We have a hotel. We have a retail division as well. So we have the ability to have cash flow to keep people employed to help us weather the storm. We've had to table some projects. There's no question about that. We've had projects that we had every intention of moving forward with that for a variety of reasons, mostly lending or the inability for equity to come to the table, to have to be just put off to the side for the time being or scrapped altogether. It's very challenging out there right now. But we feel very fortunate that we're located where we are. We see a very, very strong positive horizon out there in the years ahead. People talk about this a lot about, oh my goodness, Washington, you're insulated from everything. Well, we're not, but we are going to see, I think, the benefits of job growth in this region fairly soon, and we're going to be able to start pulling the trigger on some projects that we've had to hold back on.
Does it frustrate you if you have a project and you have to, you know, table it?
Absolutely.
And do you ever hold, when you were younger, as a younger entrepreneur, did you hold on too long?
No, I mean, you know when it's time to throw in the towel, and we've had to do that on a few occasions. But it's beyond frustrating for someone like me. I'm a type AAA person. I like to see things get done. I don't like sitting on my hands. I like to move a vision forward. And we like seeing the city continue to move forward. So it has been frustrating, particularly when we're looking at projects that we know make economic sense. We know make sense for the city. We know that the returns are there. Unless you can get folks on the equity side, on the debt side, to believe in it and want to get off the fence, you can just talk till you're blue in the face.
So when do you think that's going to come back somewhat, debt and equity?
Well, I think, you know, it can only sit on the sidelines for so long. You've got big equity players out there that are not seeing any returns at all because they're not getting their money out, and there's pressure for them to do so. And, you know, you can just sit back and wait for the next shoe to drop, but if it's not going to drop, at some point you got to get dip your toe in the water and get in. We think that's going to start happening in 2010. We think we're going to be able to launch some for-sale speculative projects that for the last 24 months, there was just absolutely no way they could go forward. There was no belief in it whatsoever. But you're looking at certain regions within the region, like, for example, Arlington and Alexandria, that have about a month and a half to maybe 2 months of product in their pipeline. And they say equilibrium in a marketplace is 6 months of product. You know, we're down to 1.7 months in some of these areas. So the simple law of supply and demand is going to really kick in, and you're going to just, with continued job growth, high income levels that we have, there's just going to be an absolute need to get some of these projects going to meet demand.
And you'll be there.
Absolutely. Provided the money's there, we'll be there.
We're speaking with the president and CEO of Abdo Development, Jim Abdo. He won the 2007 CEO of the Year Award from Smart CEO Magazine, and you were named as a finalist for the 2007 Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Awards. So what's your leadership philosophy?
Well, I think you have to be passionate about what you're doing. You absolutely have to wake up every morning and, you know, be committed to your vision, be committed to your people. Surround yourself with people that that share your vision, and also recognize your limitations. Recognize that you don't know everything. You don't have all the answers. I tell people that I get very uncomfortable in the company of people that know everything. I am the first to admit that I don't know everything. And I like being challenged by people around me. I like them knowing that they can come to me with any ideas and concepts that they have, and they can challenge my ideas. And as a result, we end up with, you know, a better project, and we make better decisions. And I think, you know, openness and inclusiveness is a very important component to good leadership. And it's been important for my company, because as we go into various neighborhoods within the city, the communities have learned to trust me and trust my company because of our openness and because of our transparency. And because we even tell the communities, we don't have all the answers. Tell us the types of things that you want to see happen. and let's see if we can find a common ground to have you be a part of our vision process. And as a result, frankly, we get better projects from this inclusiveness.
So, you know, you've made it all the way now to getting the CEO of the Year awards, you know, finalist for Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year. What was it like when you first started? What did you do wrong the first few years, entrepreneurial mistakes?
Fortunately, I made mistakes on small projects. I've always believed you have to crawl, you know, before you walk and then walk before you run. So I was very pragmatic and careful in how I grew the company. The other thing that I did is I wanted to understand every aspect of what I was doing as a developer. Pulled my own permits, built my own product, you know, was involved in every aspect of the design side of it. And there were plenty of mistakes along the way. I mean, these were mistakes that were manageable mistakes because I wasn't trying to take on too much or too large of a project all at once. I get a lot of young people that come to me for advice, and we've spoken at a lot of different universities, colleges, high schools, and I try to drive that point home. A lot of young people today immediately want to be the next Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. They don't want to recognize that you need to start small because you are going to make a whole load of mistakes along the way, and you don't want it to be over a $30 million project. You want it to be over a $300,000 project, something that's manageable when you're starting out. So that's the big advice that I put out there. But you know, to identify a single mistake would be hard. There were a lot, but each one of them I learned from, and it helped make us a better company as a result.
What are some of the trends in luxury residential and retail development that we're going to see in this market over the next year or two?
I think on the luxury development side, particularly if you're talking about for sale development, I think you're going to see smaller units with smaller price points. You may see, you know, price per square foot numbers hold true and level off in certain areas. But I think, you know, developments where you've got 3,000 square foot, $2.5 million units, those are going to be very difficult to underwrite and very hard to get launched. And I think you're going to see luxury speculative for sale development happen in submarkets within our region. There's just certain areas here that are just not going to be able to justify it. But in locations, again, smart growth locations that are close to infrastructure, close to jobs, close to mass transit, you will see a commitment to dollars in those areas, and those kinds of projects are going to be successful. There is without question significant demand right around the corner. I think it's here right now, but I think it's going to be very significant in the months ahead.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for appearing on Leaders Portfolio. We appreciate having you in studio.
Thank you so much. Have a nice Thanksgiving as well.
You as well. President and CEO of Abdo Development, Jim Abdo. And of course, you can find his bio, a link to his company, and you can catch this interview again in full at leadersportfolio.com. Also, I want to thank these exclusive sponsors of Leaders Portfolio: Dennis Cole Architects, WOW Services Group, Divine Inspiration Salon, Riverwalk, a development featured on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, Hilton Garden Inn of Fairfax, Virginia, providing all your business meeting room needs. If you're trying to reach the business community directly, consider sponsorship of Leaders Portfolio. We always love great sponsor leadership businesses who are proud of sponsoring leadership content. That's the whole goal, is to discuss great ideas with great leaders from across the D.C. area. I'm Rebecca Blacksmith. Up next, we're going to be back with an Inc. 5000 company. That's all here on Leaders Portfolio.
Leaders Portfolio with Rebecca Blacksmith, now playing at leadersportfolio.com.
Be the first to know who won our Leaders Portfolio Awards. Visit leadersportfolio.com and sign up for our mailing list. Be the first to know if your company won the Leadership Business of the Year. Sign up for our mailing list. Host Rebecca Blacksmith speaks to organizations about leadership. Find out where on our mailing list. Learn about guest interviews and leadership advice. Visit leadersportfolio.com and sign up for our mailing list.
The Hilton Garden Inn Fairfax Hotel near I-66 and 50 provides state-of-the-art guest rooms with complimentary high-speed internet access, a full-service restaurant, business meeting and banquet rooms for up to 300 guests, with a professional staff that stays focused on the details so you don't have to, and full banquet catering. Call 703-385-7774 for guest rooms, meeting space, or special events at this award-winning hotel. That's 703-385-7774. The Hilton Garden Inn Fairfax.